Die groot trek saam Dopie en Nina, weksdae tussen 3 en 6.
Ek dink ons vra onsself die vraag so baie as ons kyk na die nuus. Nie was dit real nie, is dit real?
Ja,
want
verseker.
Jy kan nie glo wat die is daar in die nuus aangaan nie. En vir hierdie segment gaan ons dit in Engels doen, want ek weet nie hoe goed haar Afrikaans is nie, maar ons het al voorheen met haar gepraat. Sy is een van die topjournaliste in die land. Karen Maughan, award-winning journalist, documentary producer, best-selling author. She writes for News 24. She's a BBC contributor. She's literally done it all. And you've probably heard the name because of the big court case with Jacob Zuma and then suing her and Billy Downer. Now for various reasons, but Karen's on the line with us. Hey, Karen, how are you?
My Afrikaans is nie te sleg nie, but I don't think you want to inflict that on your listeners.
Yeah, not yet.
I was once on CakeNet, no? And yeah. I was doing an interview on what I thought were dwellum donkeys, which is drug mules, but turns out that's not what you guys call it.
No.
And they sort of midway through the sentence, they were like, "Yeah, kan maar Engels praat," like with this like. So yeah, no, that's
bit of a slap in the face. Karen,
and so I was trying so hard. My I clicked by Engels, and I'm one of those little, you know, Western Cape girlies who learned Afrikaans at school and then in the court system, so it's not the best.
I wanted to say, are you from Durban? Because a lot of people from Durban use that as an excuse, but now you say you're from Western Cape. That really is not an excuse, Karen.
No, I know the gangster language. I know the gangster. Ni noma maki folni and all that stuff, but doesn't quite translate.
Dala, sissy, dala.
Yeah, exactly. I wear my proof.
Listen, so
let's and other phrases that cannot be repeated on radio.
Yeah,
it should not.
Let's not get too gangster, Karen. But you've got a new book out called "I Will Not Be Silenced," and it's an interesting time for this book because I mean, you guys are still currently in court cases with former President Jacob Zuma, right?
Yes, I mean he's currently trying to bring about appeals that have been turned down by the SCA and the High Court and in the Constitutional Court. And the appeal that he's bringing is kind of weirdly technical. So he wants to force the SCA to reconsider its dismissal of his appeal. I'm pretty sure that that's going to get thrown out because he did the exact same thing with Billy Downer's, special plea that he brought against Billy Downer, and then I think he will bring a sort of more full-throated appeal in the Constitutional Court. But given Jacob Zuma's propensity towards appealing, I suspect I will be 92 and in diapers, and this thing will still be going on.
So let's take it a little bit back, Karen. So as a young journo, you were roped in to cover Zuma's 2006 rape trial, and that's two decades ago almost, and you're still reporting on him and still targeted by him. And I think I know the answer, but I wanted to ask it anyway. Are you intimidated?
No. I think the thing is that you really just realize that I'm not immune to criticism, and I think that journalists can and must be aware that sometimes we get it wrong and sometimes we have perceptions or perspectives on things, or we're not aware of facts that we should know that materially impact on our journalism. And so I'm not saying that I don't believe that I'm beyond criticism, but in the Jacob Zuma realm of things, when you get accused of like falsely accused medical records and violating the NPA and that you must go to jail for 15 years, I mean, that enters the realm of lunacy. And as much as attempted to sort of scare me out of reporting on his case, which is ultimately what the court found he was doing with this private prosecution, I know that I'm not there for myself. I'm there for the South African people, and I'm going to keep doing this job for as long as I can.
Now, you mentioned information, and sometimes it feels as the public we only get certain information. How much info around Zuma is there that we don't actually have access to?
I think there is a lot of information that hasn't come out in the public domain, and I think a lot of it potentially would come out if he ever stood trial for the corruption that he's accused of, which, I mean, dates back, you know, more than two decades ago. And I think that, you know, there was a lot of, you know, really hard questioning that he was going to face in the state capture inquiry around his conduct in relation to the Gupta family, which his son Dudhasane was in business with. And again, he thwarted that kind of accountability process by simply refusing to testify. And then, you know, all hell broke loose when he was convicted of contempt and sent to prison. So there has been a refusal to be accountable, and whether in the criminal justice system or whether in regards to his conduct in the presidency. And I think there's a lot that, you know, I'm aware of that, you know, certainly we can't necessarily publish because it's quite controversial and we don't necessarily have the substantive evidence that would justify a publication. But certainly there is overwhelming evidence that, you know, his conduct, even based on the evidence that was given against him in the state capture inquiry, has been, you know, strong indications of corruption there. And unfortunately, he has yet to address any of that.
Well, Karen, we're going to be back with you in a second. We're just going to go to traffic. Karen Moore and Sam with us vandaag. Ons gas vir vanmiddag, die baie. Baie
bekroonde
journalist Karen Moore with our new book, I Will Not Be Silenced. Now, in your book, you write about powerful men who attack people to not be held accountable, Karen. Now, except for Zuma that we know of, is this prevalent in South Africa?
I don't know that it's necessarily always the case outside of the realm of politics, because you get someone like Julius Malema, he will often resort to that kind of tactic against a journalist like Poli van Wyk. We see Dali Mpofu going after Poli van Wyk in the way that he does. Oftentimes it's female journalists. Oftentimes it's anyone who seeks to essentially be a mechanism of accountability, which was what you want and need in a constitutional democracy. Mm. But the unfortunate thing is that we are in a misogynistic society, and we only need to look at the GBV rates and the violence against females, unfortunately, to know that that is the case. And a lot of the time, that abuse is particularly horrendous when it comes to women like Thuli Madonsela, like Justice Sissy Kampepe, even like Janet Love with the elections, who got falsely accused of all kinds of things simply for doing their jobs.
So talking about intimidation, have you been intimidated? And by who?
Look, I mean, I wrote in the book about, I mean, and ironically enough, Not a man. It was Dudhasile Zuma who suggested in a tweet that I was going to be someone's vafi in prison.
Huh?
That I was,
oh, wow,
basically that I was going to be raped in jail, and you know, also put up pictures of like me in an orange uniform that were, you know, according to the reporting of one of my colleagues, actually created by David Skosana, the husband of, you know, the new MK member and ex-public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane.
Is that even legal, Karen, to do things like that and say things?
Yeah,
like
it is. I mean, I think the thing is people can, you know, they have these mechanisms to do it. And oftentimes, you know, just the process of laying complaints and trying to take action is so long-winded and painful that, I mean, most people just think, you know, whatever, I've got to just handle it.
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, she was actively encouraging people to sort of beat me up as a fake news journalist. But interestingly enough, and this is what's so fascinating with her and with a lot of someone like Carl Niehaus, who said I was a dog who must be beaten till the owner comes out, which was a phrase that Iqbal Survey also used about me, was that when you see these people in real life, they run for the other side. They never,
really?
Like, will never say anything to you, but, like, will make all these, like, death threat comments,
keyboard warriors.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they not that I'm suggesting that they should get violent, but it's always interesting to me that when they have the opportunity to actually make statements to me in real life, they will completely avoid doing it, you know? It's cowardice.
So in terms of public figures that you've met and dealt with, who's the scariest, Karen?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, Jacob Zuma, shame. He at one stage was waving in a very friendly manner to me and Billy Downer in court. And I actually said to Billy, does this man even know who we are? And he was like, I'm not sure. So he can be, I mean, that's very confusing. I don't find any of them particularly scary because I think it's absolutely laughable to attempt to bully people into silence. And also you don't know South African. Like, you know, we South Africans, it's not how we're wired. You mustn't come with nonsense and expected us to keep quiet. We just don't do that, you know. It's not how we're wired.
It's like Martha South Africa Stewart taking on our milk tart.
Exactly. The milk tart example is perfect. And remember the Tyler Cullard debate?
Yes.
Of Mzansi came to the Twitter comments to be like, Futsak. So I don't know if I can say that on live radio. But you know what I mean? Like, we don't take nonsense. It's not in how we're wired. So, you know, it's not ideal when someone's saying you must be raped in prison. But also a lot of South Africans who were coming out and saying nonsense and, like, going after her. So we're not a country that just rolls over for bullies. And that's why I think, you know, really believe that we're one of the greatest countries in the world. I love us, you know. And, I mean, also the incredible support I got from so many ordinary people. Like, this old worm came all the way. He came from his farm. I don't know where he was coming from. All the way to the offices at News 24 to get a subscription. And he left. He wanted them to tell me that, no, he's there to support me. And that's why he's getting a subscription. He couldn't do it on the computer. But now he's at News 24 to do that. I mean, how adorable is that? I mean,
amazing.
That's adorable.
Yeah, that just makes you want to get that information out even more.
Exactly. And yeah, just to be encouraged by people like that.
So talking about information, and I mean, these powerful men, let's say Zuma, obviously has things that they've done that they try to hide by any means necessary. So how do you get your hands on that info to be able to write a story?
I'm very lucky because, I mean, obviously we had the state capture inquiry where they did amazing investigations and they got witnesses to come and give evidence. I think in the state capture inquiry, it was several dozen people that implicated the former president wrongdoing. And also what's great for me and, you know, even in this private prosecution is I work from court papers. So I just need to track down the court documents. Even the story I did today about Jacob Zuma trying to claim that his deceased lawyer was somehow liable for the 28.9 million rand he owes in legal fees. That's straight from court papers, you know. So people will, you know, there's this weird thing where people will attack you because of what someone else is saying in court papers. And I think that's just a general comprehension problem. But, you know, and we can have a discussion about the education system at some other juncture. But, you know, most of the time it's, pretty much all of the time, it's stuff that's in court records. You just have to sit there, listen to it, go through it, and then explain it in a way that, you know,
people
the public
can
understand. Exactly.
Now, I don't know why, but I have this theory when it comes to Jacob Zuma, and it does come across that people worship the ground that he walks on, especially now with the formation of the new party. And then, on the other hand, you have people who simply just don't want to stand up against him. So what is it about Zuma that people fear so much?
Well, you know, the thing is, in the book, I write about the fact that he was extremely brave in terms of the context of Natal at that stage. And, you know, when there was huge IFP violence against the ANC, a lot of which we now know was being supported by the apartheid military structures. And he was the guy that came in and brought peace. He was the guy that said to the ANC when they wanted to dispute the provincial elections in the 94 elections, because the IFP won KZN, he said to them, don't do that. You know, he went to jail for 10 years on Robben Island. I write about that. No one ever visited him. You know, he gave up a lot for this country. And there's a tragic it's almost tragic to me that someone who was once fighting so hard for this democracy is now seeking to subvert and destroy it because he's become so obsessed with power to the point where he's accused all kinds of people, including his own wife, of trying to poison him. I mean, the man lives in this castle of paranoia and delusion where anyone who tries to hold him accountable is now, you know, on the payroll of the CIA and that means that people, even within his own circle, who have tried to be that word of wisdom or that word of truth, he's just completely disavowed and sort of turned on in quite a vicious way. And there's something extremely tragic of that, tragic about that. Mm. And I think it feeds into why people are scared of him, because if you speak up for him, as Nhlanhla Nene did, as Pravin Gordhan did, as Thuli Madonsela did, you know, and, you won't just have your, you know, you won't just be attacked in terms of the work that you've done. You'll be attacked over your character, and you'll be falsely accused of being an agent of the West and being this treasonous person. I mean, that's ultimately what he did to Pravin Gordhan. That's why he fired him, was because he said he was committing economic treason with Western government. So, I mean, it's terrifying to be the target of not just this man's malice, but this man's madness, you know? Mm. And I think that's what a lot of people are scared of.
Now, back in the day, you know, during apartheid, we know that Zuma was part of the intelligence for Mkhonto Sizwe and that kind of thing. Don't you think he has some kind of dirt on some of these high-ranking officials that guys much rather just stay quiet than having him just dish out all of their dirty laundry?
Well, I mean, he has tried to claim that before, right? I mean, when he came to the state capture inquiry waving that list of names, but he's never failed to produce anything. He's never actually failed to he's failed to produce any real evidence. And so it comes to a point where you're like, well, if you've got all this information, why don't you just tell us? You know, exactly. I mean, you bought a permanent prosecution. You've been hinting all this time darkly that you have all this information. Well, then show it. Mm. Like, I strongly suspect that, I mean, when he was in the intelligence structures, I mean, there's also, you know, there was allegations that was the time at which he made all his contacts with Vladimir Putin, who was then, you know, in upper echelons of the KGB and. I mean, we also need to take, you know, evaluate those stories with a pinch of salt. But I think that, you know, I think that he definitively believes this kind of paranoid theory that he's being targeted because he can expose the apartheid agents. But I mean, who in the apartheid structures is still alive, guys?
Exactly. True.
I mean, and why would Western governments, why would, for example, as he believes, Barack Obama's CIA want him dead? I mean, also, when people come with paranoid stories, one really needs to interrogate what the chances are of them actually being true. And just in the landscape of modern life, I mean, I don't think there's any truth to that at all.
But don't these people see the madness? Don't they see it?
Well, I mean, you know what's so interesting for me is that, like, a few years ago, the Financial Times, which is obviously a UK-based publication, did an investigation into pro-Kremlin social media contact and content and penetration into Africa. Guess which two countries were literally, like, the most penetrated? I mean, there was a light blue for low penetration, and there was like a navy blue for dark penetration, and it was us and Nigeria.
I would imagine.
We have also a very distorted social media environment, which presents us as being very supportive of the Kremlin, to the point where certain EFF members were openly calling Ukrainians Nazis and all kinds of insane things. And I think there certainly is this. I think a lot of people privately will think, my God, this is insane. But I think we're being put out, you know, made to believe in a way that there is this strong support for some of this madness. And if you looked at social media, you would be convinced that there was like sort of a strong support for some of these more insane crazy theories. Mm. And that's why I always tell people, please be careful of particularly Twitter on and Facebook on some of this stuff, because it really presents a perspective of reality that has no basis in actual facts, in actual reality at all.
So, Karen, we almost need to let you go. In terms of the case against you and Billy Downer, why do you think it was necessary for Zuma to rope you in?
I think they wanted to set an example to other journalists. And this was actually noted by the Supreme Court of Appeal judge, Nathan Ponan. He said that it wasn't just about, like, impinging on my rights to dignity and privacy and all of those things and scaring me. It was actually about having a chilling effect to other journalists and saying, look what can happen to you if you report on powerful people. And I think that that was part of the social media shaming as well, was, you know, if you humiliate someone, if you put someone in the dark, if you see this journalist who's just basically done her job, you think, you will think twice about potentially reporting on powerful people. And I'm glad that we won the case, but I still worry that that kind of chilling effect is still being realized in our journalistic circles, particularly with younger journalists who may be more impressionable and maybe more vulnerable to that kind of manipulation.
Karen, 30 seconds. Why did you feel the need to write this book, I Will Not Be Silenced?
I think so many people have said so many things about me, and I wanted the chance to tell my own story and to just expose all of the lies and all of the dishonesty, and also to recognize and honor the many other women and people like Raymond Zondor as well, who have also been falsely dragged through the mud just for doing their jobs, and to encourage them to don't, you know, this is a great country. This is a democracy that was very, very hard won. We can't just give it up to psychopaths and despots. We can't.
Well, Karen, we really appreciate your time. It's always fantastic speaking to you because you're so well informed.
Thank you, guys. You're fantastic.
And thank you so much for writing the book. I can't wait to finish reading it. It's called I Will Not Be Silenced, Karen Morn. It's the new one out, and there's a lot of stories that you probably never heard of if you don't follow the news actively all the time. And Karen, when there's something lacquer happening there with the stories, send us a little scoop there, man.
Of course, guys. You're my homies now.
There you go. Karen Morn, Karen. Thanks, Karen. Have a great day.
Cheers.
Bye. All right. Kop nou. 5:30.
Ready. Dis 'n eer om Karen te
ons is homies. Karen Morn.
Kuier maandag tot vrijdag saam Dobie en Nina. 3 tot 6. Net hier op die Groot Trek. Op Groot FM 90.5.